In the future months, we are going to approach doctors and lawyers, and we want to convince them to care about the Istanbul Protocol. But how would you introduce them? What would you say? What is the Istanbul Protocol? What is it good for?
I'm sure that nobody wants to live in a world with torture, because everybody can be a torture victim easily. It depends on the consequences and the circumstances all over the world. Because in one country, for years, we don't just meet with any torture cases, and afterwards, immediately everything changes and everybody becomes a torture victim. Nowadays, in Middle Eastern countries, for example, did we expect this kind of violence and war? No, but so perfectly think that people should care for themselves first, because I know that they care for themselves. First, they have to care for themselves, they have to protect themselves, and in order to protect themselves, they have to protect the world and the environment and the people around them, the human beings, because every human being just deserves the dignity to live in a dignified way in a better world. Istanbul Protocol is a way of just building a world without torture, because it's a preventive mechanism. So if we have standards to diagnose torture, if we have standards to investigate torture, then we can prevent, and in a way we can also know how to rehabilitate these people and to live in the community without the consequences of torture. I think it's an essential document for medical doctors, it's an essential document for psychologists, it's an essential document for legal professionals, but it is also an essential document for all the community, because they have to know about the consequences of torture. For example, a torture victim does not consider just to apply for rehabilitation services. If they do not have rehabilitation, afterwards they could not have the social functioning properly, then maybe they would be away from the community, they would be away from the family, from their children, and afterwards it will be the trauma for generations, because the children also have the trauma in their feelings, and everybody. So I think it is a necessity for all people, not only for professionals.
The IP has been in use for quite some years. What do you think have you and other experts achieved? What has been, for instance, what were the success stories? What is different now the Istanbul Protocol exists compared to the situation before? What was it useful for?
Yeah, for sure there are many success stories all over the world, actually. For example, in the Philippines, when we first started the trainings, there was no domestic law prohibiting and having punishment for torture. But now, after many years, we had a domestic law for torture, and also we had several cases who had been taken in front of the court, and we had success stories for these kind of cases. We proved torture for them. But first, when we started in early 2000, we have never expected this kind of results. In Sri Lanka, we had cases. In Egypt, you know about the Alexandrian case, which had also forced people to have the spring revolution, in a way. They still discuss. Of course, they have problems. But this was one of the first torture cases that could be proved. In Morocco, in Lebanon, in Israel. In Israel, for example, now we work with colleagues from the Jewish community and the Palestinian community. They are collaborating to just have assessments for torture victims and take the cases to the court. And nowadays there is a discussion about a case who have been dead in the prison and in a way considered that a torture case, and we work together, we just discuss together. So in Israel, once they discussed in the parliament about some part, some limited torture could be practiced. And now the medical doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists are discussing and collaborating together with Palestinians and just accept the absolute prohibition of torture. There are some cases from Mexico, there are cases from Georgia. We have, for example, one of the best examples is Georgia. When we had first visited Georgia in 2002, Georgia was the first country for Istanbul Protocol Implementation Project in IRCT. And they had a dependent forensic institute. They didn't know how to manage. They had problems. And now they have a Georgian Forensic Association, an independent system. So they work with torture victims. And there was a rehabilitation center, but had severe problems, of course, with the government. Now they are more strong, and they had brought many cases in front of the court, and they are accepted as torture cases. In Serbia also, we have colleagues who work with torture cases. Jan, the organization, which is a rehabilitation center for torture victims, they work with them. And also they raise awareness in the country. Several other countries now. So I can tell many success stories, but in Turkey particularly, because it is the Istanbul Protocol, and in Turkey we have managed a lot, and we had been against impunity for many years, but we didn't have the standard tool just to prove torture and to combat impunity. Now we managed it, and they had to change the system. They had to change the procedures of detainment, and also in the prisons they have changed a lot old methods of torture. So it is a success, I think.
Talking about the implementation of the Istanbul Protocol in Europe, it can be surely a very useful instrument for asylum seekers and to establish some sort of standard behavior and processes. Is it in use? Do the people active in asylum processes know about it? Are you aware of that?
For some asylum processes in the European countries, some non-governmental rehabilitation centers practice, and they work for asylum seekers. So they practice Istanbul Protocol, they implement Istanbul Protocol to their work. For example, in Hungary, I know that Cordelia Foundation works with asylum seekers, so they implement Istanbul Protocol for their work. In UK, Medical Foundation is one of the evaluators of these asylum seekers, and they implement Istanbul Protocol in their work. In Berlin Rehabilitation Center, BZFO, they also implement Istanbul Protocol. So there are many countries, but of course there are countries which do not have any relationship with Istanbul Protocol. Because, of course, it is difficult sometimes just to use the same standards in different countries. Some of them have their own guidelines. Some of them have no guidelines at all. And in many countries, the asylum seekers are evaluated and the assessments have been made by the government officials. And they are not interested in these kind of standards and guidelines. So we have to promote this Istanbul Protocol, actually not only Istanbul Protocol, but the guidelines, a proper way of interviewing, examining, and investigating these kind of cases. So we have too much work to do. And Artık project is important in this sense, because in Artık project we work with the law schools, actually. It is important. The less powerful chain part is the law schools. We don't have good relationship. We have collaboration with the medical doctors, psychologists, social workers, but I don't know why the law schools do not have these kind of interests. So maybe we can have more good steps, further steps for this project.
Maybe the experts in Europe think the Istanbul Protocol is not for the everyday use in my profession, but maybe that would be some sort of approach to explain to them what would be the benefit of using Istanbul Protocol in the everyday practice of a medical doctor, of a psychologist, of a lawyer in Europe. Why should they care?
Of course, in Europe, not only for the asylum seekers, but also for the applications, for the practices in the countries is very important, because recently there are demonstrations and there are some violent attacks to the demonstrators by the law enforcement officials. And we started to discuss about other kind of violent behavior and ill-treatment. So it is not only torture, but it is whether this is a proportionate way of force or not. So they would need a lot of proper steps to evaluate, to investigate and to have the assessments for these kind of cases, not only for the asylum seekers. And also, of course, they need the proper way of practicing in the asylum fields. For example, we know that not only accepting these people and making the assessments, but the conditions in the asylums are not very proper. So it is also for monitoring bodies. It is also for national preventive mechanisms, for human rights bodies, the official human rights bodies in the countries. So they would benefit because it is easier to have a guideline. If you don't have a guideline, so you can miss a point, and then afterwards you have to just look for that missing point for many years and never able to reach these points. So it is important to have the guideline all the time. We, the medical people, know about that. And also we always just talk about practicing evidence-based medicine. And Istanbul Protocol just describes the evidence-based medicine for torture victims, how to cope with them. But also now the legal systems need the evidence-based assessments and investigations. So there is a guideline. Of course, maybe we need to improve the guideline. We need some review and just revisions for this guideline. But we have a guideline already.
That's right. What I've heard, not just today, but in the past 2 years of the ARTIP project, is that now and then the doctors complain that the lawyers could help more, contribute more to the documenting and investigating and preventing of torture, and vice versa. The lawyers now and then complain that they don't understand doctors. What do you think we could do for bringing these experts more together so that they help each other? What should they do to make the work of the other person easier? For instance, the lawyers for you, or what could you do to help lawyers to make their job easier?
For Istanbul Protocol implementation project, our main idea was to bring all these professions together and to have the trainings together. Of course, we had some parallel sessions, but mostly the plenary came together and tried to understand their professional language. It is important. Istanbul Protocol is, in a way, a common document for all these professions to have a common language. But I know that it is not very easy because the legal professionals need 100% evidence, while the medical doctors cannot always provide 100% evidence for these cases. So we have to know our challenges, our limitations, and try to just get over these limitations to have a common understanding for all of these cases. How we can achieve? I think the universities have to have curriculums, common curriculums, the law schools and the medical schools. And from time to time, they have to come together to discuss together. I just know this one very well because I teach in the law school as well. They need forensic medicine. Not for forensic medicine, but to understand what we say. And I try to understand them and their needs so that I can just bring all this information and this knowledge to the medical school just to teach the medical students to tell in the same language. So we have to have the curriculums. For example, one of the success stories is the curriculum for Cairo University and the curriculum for Georgia State Medical University. It is really incredible, but they have 42 hours curriculum study for Istanbul Protocol only in Cairo University and also in the Georgian University. And also they started to teach human rights, ethics, and the medical assessment of torture in the universities, in several universities. So I think we should have some common courses for legal students and medical students and bring them together to discuss the same issue.
I would like to ask you about the training, because not everybody who has read the Istanbul Protocol can become a trainer easily. You have to be very experienced. And I imagine that when we disseminate and advertise the Istanbul Protocol, professional association will become interested. Then how do they organize the trainings in the best way? Whom should they contact? How do they get in touch with the people who may come into the country and start introducing the Istanbul Protocol? What would you advise, for instance, in my country, in the Czech Republic, not much has been done yet. And if somebody is interested based on the ARTIP project, what would be the first step? Where to go? Whom to ask for trainings, for instance?
There is a plan of action study about Istanbul Protocol now. Physician for Human Rights, Human Rights Foundation, IRCT, International Reputation Council for Torture Victims. They come together and discuss what to do just to disseminate all this knowledge and the accumulated experience. I think there should be a kind of online training system for everybody so that they can reach all the documents, all the training material. The training material should be a common training material. For example, in Turkey, we trained 3,500 medical doctors. It was 110 trainings in 1 year. Not 1 year, 7 months. So in 7 months, 100 training, it means 10 training every month. So it is impossible with very few people to train these people. It is important just to have some resource people whom you can train, and afterwards just you can have the big trainings. Maybe some few people supervise the training, but then mostly the people who had been trained before will have the trainings. We had the training of trainers for IRCT project afterwards for prevention through documentation. And then these trainers who are trained just had several trainings in the countries. But first we should have some standard training materials for everybody, and they should be user-friendly. Everybody can understand and use easily. There should be some visual documentation, video recordings, for example, for interviews, for proper examination, the best practice examples. So we can have such kind of website. Norwegian Medical Association has a prison doctors training, an online training. Similarly, the national medical associations can just have these kind of websites, online training. It could be standard. and supported by World Medical Association, because World Medical Association is part of the project for many years, from 2001, and also during the drafting process and finalization process. So we can use the associations. Of course, I talk about the medical association, but the legal associations, the bar associations, for example, because lawyers need this document and these trainings. And sometimes they can't reach a medical doctor, a health professional, so the lawyer is the only contact person with the torture victim. How to take a picture, how to talk, how to interview without re-traumatizing these people. So they are all essential.
Mm-hmm. And last question. You have a lot of experience behind you with the Istanbul Protocol in all these years, and many memories and many stories. Could you think of one which is for you an outstanding memory or a story you would like to point out or to underline? I know there are many, but maybe you have some on your mind.
When you ask this like this, I can't remember.
Yeah, I know, it's always like that. It can be a person, a moment, an event, something positive, something negative.
Well, usually there are always very positive stories. Not, maybe there are more, but one of them, there was a case of torture, and I try to remember the countries now. There are too many. So which was the country? Was it the Philippines? Yeah, the Philippines. The Philippines. And we had to interview and examine this case in the prison. It was a very difficult situation because he was convicted. So we had to enter the prison for having the assessment. The prison authority and the perpetrators are different officials. Usually the military has the torture practice, and prison officers do not torture people at all. So they accept us to enter and to examine and make assessments for these cases. It's an open garden with only barbed wire. So everybody can see inside, and the prisoners, the inmates can see outside, and the perpetrator, we didn't know, of course, we didn't know the perpetrator. He had been just sitting outside, and the victim, of course, there were many people. We met with all people, so the perpetrator probably assumed that we just entered there to examine him because he was a recent prisoner, tortured. But we just met with everybody and shake hands, so greeted each other, and he was so stressful. And I said, is there a problem? What could we do? Maybe we have to find a proper place. Do you know any place? He said, my perpetrator is outside watching us. So I said, okay. And I just walked to the prison guard and started to talk with them. And I just said, we have to find another place and we have to move all together, because the perpetrator should not understand that we are there to have the assessment for that torture victim. He immediately changed. His face changed. He was relieved because we are crowded and we are talking with the prison guard, so we are not interested with that one. And this built the trust in between us. And afterwards we entered, he was more confident, and also afterwards the recognition of torture, when he told about the story and when I examined and just found the signs of torture that he described, he was really relieved and confident about his story because people do not believe each other. They say that they exaggerate or they make up stories. This is not correct. Although all the prisoners, the inmates, have been tortured before, even they just question each other's stories. So it is important to see the body structure of these people. For example, they first start without having an eye contact, with all the shoulders, the head in the middle of the shoulders, and step by step they start to look in your eyes and their body just moves upwards. So you can see how the dignity builds during these interviews. But there are many interesting stories, maybe. I can't remember now. Maybe I have to write them afterwards.